This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We continue exploring the amazing cases encountered and reported by our guests, Tobias and Emily Wayland. They're with the Singular Fortean Society, where they collect a lot of this stuff. Do you guys get to do a lot of on-site investigations?
We do. Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously 2020 and a good portion of 2021 was restricted. But, you know, yeah, it is something we've always tried to do is get out and get out to sighting locations and even areas that just have, like, reported sightings, regardless of how old they are, just as an investigative endeavor to go out and see if there's anything to be seen. But, absolutely. You know, we've got a couple of on-site investigations coming up, actually. I spoke to a witness in Madison, Wisconsin, relatively recently, who said that he was at a dog park, of all places, right in Madison, near the, for anybody familiar with Madison, this would be near the Alliant Energy Center. And he was at the dog park out there, which is a wide open space. You know, it's a lot of green space, and then it's got, you know, some woods and a creek and everything. And he had his dog, of course, and he also had his infant son. So while he was at the dog park, of course, his dog is running around playing. He happens to look over in the woods, and this was maybe 9 a.m. or something, and he said he saw what he described as a sort of bulky black figure, sort of peek out from behind some trees. And he described it as having shoulders so broad that they almost look like shoulder pads, like football shoulder pads. And then it had this sort of bulkiness to its body that he couldn't tell if it had something wrapped around it. You know, of course, his mind went to some very weird places. You know, he sort of speculated that, you know, maybe it had wings wrapped around it or something, but it could have been a lot of things, maybe a cloak or something similar. And that he saw this thing, and then he was momentarily distracted, having to pay attention to what his dog was doing, and he looked back, and it was gone. But what was interesting, or one of the things that was interesting about this particular sighting, is he said when he was looking at the thing, it certainly noticed him and seemed to take steps to sort of make itself less obvious as soon as he noticed it. You know, sort of like got lower, like flattened out a little bit. And so that's an area that Emily and I are very familiar with. And so, you know, our plan is to head out there and poke around a little bit. You know, just hearing his testimony, you know, there are prosaic explanations that I think are possible here. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, maybe it was like a homeless person or something who had been sleeping back there. Maybe they had a sleeping bag or something wrapped around them, and that was it. And so, you know, if we go back into the woods there and see any signs of habitation, you know, then I think there's a distinct possibility that was it. But who knows, really? It was an interesting enough sighting. There's another sighting report we received recently of a winged humanoid down in Rockford. That's only about 45 minutes to us in Illinois, just over the border. And that's one that we need to go, you know, and kind of check out. That was one where a woman was with her mother, and this would have been at nighttime, which is the normal time to usually expect for people to have monster sightings and stuff, of course. And she said that they saw this winged humanoid, you know, this humanoid with these large wings, flying out of some trees and sort of along this canal behind their apartment building. this wasn't like a repeated encounter or anything, but, you know, again, we like to go out to these areas regardless of whether or not I think there's a high chance of repeatability for the actual anomalous experience. Because it's good to get the lay of the land. I think that for things like the winged humanoid sighting, of course, like getting a general sense of how isolated the area is, any potential places where something could sort of creep around or hide, or even if they're, you know, if there's a lot of, you know, large birds or something that like to roost in that canal, like all of those things would be interesting to us to know, you know, when in investigating something like that, because you can't stop with somebody's testimony. At the very least, you know, we want to verify all of the details that we can. You know, like everything that's really verifiable. So you're thinking in terms of like historical weather data and geographic data and stuff like that, where at the very least we can say, well, everything that it's possible to check about their story, you know, checks out. And so, you know, maybe the rest of it is true too.
Well, you know, you're certainly in a great location because, you know, Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, over to, you know, Iowa. I mean, those areas have been a hotbed of cryptid activity for years.
Oh, certainly. One of the things that we've been investigating that's taken up quite a bit of our time since 2017 have been winged humanoid reports around Lake Michigan. And those reports have come from, you know, of course, perhaps most famously from the Chicagoland area. But really, you know, I think some of the most credible reports have come from outside of that. So, yeah, you have stuff, you know, in northern Illinois, really all of Illinois. And then, you know, southern and southeastern Wisconsin, northern Indiana, northern and western in Indiana, but also like around areas like Muncie, the Prairie Creek Reservoir, that there were some interesting sightings out there. And then, you know, of course, specifically in southeastern Wisconsin, you've got the Kettle Moraine State Forest and southeastern Wisconsin is renowned for a number of sightings, including Bigfoot and of course, the Beast of Bray Road, which is probably Wisconsin's most famous cryptid or series of cryptid encounters anyway. And so you get Bigfoot and Dogman sightings and even stranger things in southeastern Wisconsin, but especially along the Kettle Moraine State Forest, that whole Ice Age glacial trail that goes from southeastern Wisconsin all the way up north. Just all along that, you get a variety of strange creature sightings for whatever reason.
Your first book dealt exclusively with the winged weirdos, and I know from previous conversations that some of your investigations, especially dealing with the ones that happened around the Chicago area, have been rather frustrating.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. You know, there are a lot of good, credible sightings that we've received, but there have been a lot of other sightings where it has been very difficult to follow up with witnesses. And honestly, that was a big, I should say much of the impetus, for writing the Lake Michigan Mothman was because I saw people trying to, you know, make all of these inferences and things based on the idea that all of the reports were sort of equally valid, right? Like they're all equally credible and should all be treated that way. And that isn't correct, in my opinion, because there were some that we were able to follow up on quite well and some of them that just weren't followed up on much at all. And that isn't an indictment against any investigator or anything. I mean, certainly everybody followed up on things as well as they could. But if you have limited contact with a witness and they just sort of disappear, you know, whatever you're left with is the investigation at that point.
We'll be back momentarily with Emily and Tobias and Gene and Tim. You're in
Global Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Do you experience fatigue when you know you should have energy? One reason fatigue can occur is due to a lack of antioxidants in the body. This deficiency happens the older we get, or due to eating an unhealthy diet, or even due to exercise. Your body's number one antioxidant is glutathione. When your cells are depleted of glutathione, you will be fatigued, inflamed, possibly depressed, and may also feel pain. Empirical results indicate that consuming green metal whey protein powder is the most effective means of increasing glutathione production. Green metal whey supplies nature's richest source of the precursor to making glutathione within the trillions of cells of your body. This protein strongly supports the cell's ability to make glutathione. Add to this that green metal whey also supports immunity, energy, lean muscle development, fat loss, and has anti-cancer properties, and you have nature's most complete and strongest superfood. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue them up. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
I'm about to give you a life-changing URL that if you will simply visit it and give these tax consultants a call, it will change your life. Whether you're a blue-collar worker, or whether you're a school teacher, or whether you're a scientist, or whether you're a millionaire, almost no one out there is taking advantage of legal, lawful tax loopholes. Go to GCNTaxCut.com. It takes you right to American Tax Solutions, and they will give you an amazing preview of what they can do for you. GCNTaxCut.com, GCNTaxCut.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now, when it's difficult, Tobias, to follow up on a case, is it because people are just making it up, wanting to get in on the action?
You know, that's a good question, and it's certainly something to consider. I will say this. I don't have any firm evidence to support the idea that there have been people hoaxing sighting reports. However, I'm also not willing to lend my credibility to the idea that sighting reports in which we were not able to investigate them to my standards are credible reports. And so they're sort of just in this weird in between, you know, somewhere between real and imaginary, where we don't know if they're valid or not. So I understand completely if somebody wanted to disregard those. If somebody was like, well, you know what, that wasn't really followed up on super well, and so I don't think it's of much use. I think that is a perfectly reasonable way to look at something like that. I would draw the line at anybody making any sort of firm determination about those sightings, because the fact is we just don't know. There are multiple reasons why somebody might cut off contact. Many people are very, very reluctant to come forward with their experience. And so it wouldn't surprise me if somebody just wanted to be heard and they didn't really want a lot of contact with an investigator because they were uncomfortable. People can be very shy. These experiences tend to be a little embarrassing for a lot of people to talk about, not because the experience itself is embarrassing, but because they're worried that somebody is going to make fun of them for talking about it. And so they've gotten so used to not talking about it and so used to when they do talk about it being made fun of, that I think it's understandable why they would be a little reluctant to really put themselves out there. And so I think some people might see, you know, an article that we published or something about these things, or somebody else publishing articles, you know, be it Lon over at Fans and Monsters or Manuel at UFO Clearinghouse or anybody else writing about this stuff. And then we've had some friends pass along reports to us from other sites. And so they might see something about this investigation, or at least one of the cases within it. And so, you know, I saw something weird, and maybe send just a one-off email or something, but they don't really necessarily want to talk about it. Or people change their minds. You know, maybe they were ready to, they thought they were ready to talk about it, but it comes time to actually, you know, speak with an investigator, and people get cold feet. You know, it's weird talking to a stranger on the phone about something that that you think there's this stigma around, and you're used to being mocked over. And so there, like I said, there's a lot of different possibilities for those reports. And so I think the only honest thing we can do, the only honest way we can go about it, is to say, I don't know when it comes to those. And if we can learn anything from them, like let's say they generally support a profile of sighting that we're getting from more credible cases where we do have extensive contact with witnesses and we're able to get out to the sighting location and dig around and all of that stuff, then I think they have some value there. But yeah, overall, you know, I don't spend a lot of time on those. And that's why when I talk about this, this investigation too, I don't spend as much time on like the urban Chicago area, because a lot of those sightings, I think, are the least credible in terms of you know, how much follow up there was, the level of communication with the witnesses, you know, so on and so forth. The absolute best sightings that we've received, where we really were able to dig into them and talk to witnesses and go out to sighting areas and stuff, were all in either southeastern Wisconsin or like northern Illinois, you know, outside of Chicago. You know, of course, I've also talked to witnesses in Indiana and things like that. But, you know, in terms of the sightings within the very developed area, of, they have the largest percentage of sort of problematic reports where I can't really make a firm determination one way or another due to lack of data. And so, you know, I just think that it's probably more fruitful to go in other directions and concentrate on those too much. I will say this as well. When it comes to the actual like urban center of Chicago, when there are reports coming out of that area, they also seem to have the highest probability of being misidentified large bird species. You know, I can give you an example. In May of 2018, there was a gentleman who was riding his bike to work. He worked in the Pilsen neighborhood of Chicago, and he noticed on his way to work, this would have been sometime in the afternoon, he saw this gentleman and this lady standing on the street corner pointing at something in the sky, and so he looks up and he sees what he would later describe to me as this sort of bat-like creature that resembled nothing more than a man in a wingsuit. And so luckily, this guy, he's got a GoPro camera on his helmet, and he decides that he's going to follow this thing around at least for as long as he can without being late to work and get as much footage of it as he can. And he was very forthcoming with that footage. He even sent us the original SD card and everything. So he wasn't trying to hide anything. And with his help, we were able to isolate a few good stills of this creature, you know, out of his footage. And, you know, we took a look at it, we blew him up and everything, and it's a bird. I mean, I am convinced 100% that it was a large bird. I would guess something like a great blue heron, you know, just based on its silhouette, because it looked like it had its head kind of pulled back like a heron does. And it looked big, and I don't begrudge this witness for thinking that it was something stranger, but I think it was definitely a bird. And in speaking with him, I am also convinced that what he had for him was an anomalous experience. I am similarly convinced that he was authentically relating his experience as he perceived it to me when I spoke to him. I don't think he was trying to hide anything. People who are trying to hide things don't send you the original SD card that a video is on or anything like that. And so there's a distinct possibility that a good portion, and I would estimate, you know, 40 to 45% of the overall sightings and the majority of these misidentifications, complete my first thought before I move on to the next one. Probably 40 to 45% of the overall sightings could be misidentified birds. And the greatest majority of that 40 to 45% would be cases that were reported out of the urban Chicago area. And the reason for that is actually pretty interesting if you're into, like, ecology or anything like that.
Before you go into that explanation as to why that part of Chicago, the urban area, would engender this type of report, we're going to break with Gene and Tim and Emily and Tobias. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Renowned author Salman Rushdie remains hospitalized as his attacker is formally charged in a courtroom in western New York. 24-year-old Hadi Matar pleaded not guilty to attempted murder and assault for his alleged attack on the 75-year-old Rushdie. Rushdie remains hospitalized on a ventilator and will likely lose an eye. He has been the subject of death threats for more than three decades since his novel, The Satanic Verses, was released. Former President Donald Trump said the trove of documents taken from his Florida estate had been declassified. According to an inventory taken, FBI agents took about 20 boxes of items from Mar-a-Lago, including a variety of classified materials. The warrant used to execute the search was unsealed Friday. Trump wrote that all of the materials taken were declassified and that federal agents didn't have to seize anything, accusing authorities of playing politics. This is USA Radio News. The family of a soldier who was killed at a military base near Killing, Texas, is suing the government. Vanessa Guillen was killed by a fellow soldier in 2020 at Fort Hood. A military investigation found that she was also sexually harassed and that leaders failed to take appropriate action. The lawsuit narrative says she told family that she didn't report the incidents, fearing retaliation. Her family is seeking $35 million. The State Department is telling citizens in Mexico to shelter in place due to fires, roadblocks, and police activity in several towns, including Tijuana, Mexicali, and Rosarito. The towns are in the Mexican state of Baja California, where gang violence erupted late Friday and early Saturday. The U.S. consulate asking citizens to take multiple steps to protect themselves. Exercise bike maker Peloton told employees that 780 jobs will be cut, prices are going up, and a significant number of its stores will be closing in a bid to become profitable. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Every day we take steps to keep the people we love safe, but some health risks are easy to miss. Ticks hiding in the yard can spread germs that can cause Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Mice searching for sources of food can spread bacteria and disease. Mosquitoes breed in standing water and can transmit illnesses like West Nile virus and Zika virus. Cockroaches are drawn to water in the home and can leave behind allergens that trigger asthma attacks. Stinging insects attack in defense of their nests and send more than 500,000 people to the emergency room every year. Household pests are a threat to our health. Learn what you can do to protect your family at pestworld.org.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Tobias, okay, what is it about that part of the urban area, Chicago, my kind of town? What? I don't know. I just couldn't stop.
You know, you can have a really nice day going there to try to find Mothman or whatever. Just make sure you hit some of the museums and stuff first. So what a lot of people don't know is that because of climate change and the destruction of their wetland habitats, there have been more large bird species than ever roosting actually in Chicago. And so the population of herons, for instance, roosting in Chicago in places like Lincoln Park. So like, you know, in Chicago, has exploded in the past 10, 12 years, you know, by orders of magnitude. And so I think what's happening is in some of these cases, now again, for anybody listening who is immediately upset, this is not my sandhill crane moment. I'm not explaining away Mothman as a sandhill crane or anything else similarly ridiculous. But you know, if we don't explain the things we can, why would anybody believe us about the things we can't? Yeah. And so just for some of these cases, there's good evidence that they are misidentified birds. And so what I think is happening is you've got this population of herons in Chicago, in this urban center, that has exploded over the past decade. And you've got a lot more people seeing these large birds that aren't necessarily used to seeing them specifically in flight. Like, it's not that weird to see a crane or a heron or whatever, but they are, you know, they're largely ground birds. That's where they hunt and live and everything. And they normally just fly to get to place to place. And so I think that what you're seeing is people who aren't used to seeing these birds in flight suddenly, because of the population explosion in this area, are seeing a lot more of them in flight, and that's very alien to them. And so it's led to misidentifications from people, you know, who are otherwise honest, you know, just regular people, not out to scam anybody, but they really have seen something that that they just can't explain.
What about cases that, you know, you personally, you two personally investigated? I mean, any of them stand out to you as being really compelling?
Oh, definitely.
There's definitely a couple.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple that, stand out. I think that I think Emily and I could both agree on would be Woodstock, Illinois. This would have been February of
2019.
Thank you. There was a gentleman in Woodstock, Illinois, who had run out for just running a normal errand. And this is so common. Like, most people do not set out to encounter a monster, right? This guy was just running out for milk. He went down the road to the local Walgreens and he bought his milk. It's just after 8 p.m. on an Illinois evening in February, so it's completely dark out at that point. And as he's headed home, he's passing the opening to the Dewfield Pond conservation area. As he's pulling up on it, you know, in his headlights, he sees this thing step out onto the road in front of him, and he described it as this large hairy humanoid, you know, somewhere around 7 or 8 feet tall. And he said that at first he thought, you know, it was a Bigfoot or something, and then he noticed it had these large leathery wings, and it walked out into the road in front of him, and he caught it full on in his headlights for several seconds as it crossed the road. And then it crossed the road and went between this house and this line of trees. And then behind this house is the McHenry County Fairgrounds. And then behind that it's all farmland and woods and stuff. And so this thing crossed the road and was gone, basically. And, you know, I was put onto this case by Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters. And I spoke to the witness over the phone first. And it was agreed that that Emily and I should probably, you know, go down there and take a look around. And he was very gracious and hospitable in terms of that. And so we did. And we went down there. We met him. We met his wife, and they took us out to the sighting area. Showed us around Dewfield Pond. There was still some snow on the ground and some ice. And while we were out there, you know, I noticed a lot of the sort of tracks that you would expect. There were some bird tracks, probably like egret or you know, a smaller species of heron or something similar. And there were some canine tracks, probably from people walking dogs and stuff, because you had some boot tracks and stuff out there too. And then we noticed, though, towards the entrance where the thing would have come from, you know, as it, like just before it crossed the road, I noticed this single anomalous print in the ice, you know, and it's in ice. So we have our means of recording it are very limited. And so we took some photos, but it looked like a large naked footprint. You know, like a humanoid print where you can see the individual toes and everything in it. And that was just very bizarre to me, you know, to have this large footprint like that, in the ice in this area, seemed strange. And otherwise though, in meeting these people, you know, it's one thing for somebody to read about a witness's experience in, say, my book or you know, an article on our website or something similar. But to meet people and see the nervousness, the fear sometimes in relating these experiences that stay with them for days, weeks, months, years, it's very powerful. And this was one of those experiences. We had to be very careful about preserving the identities of these particular people because, you know, they were professionals within this community. They had, you know, real careers and lives that could be turned upside down if someone were to find out that this man had this monster sighting. And that's most people, frankly. You know, like there's a reason that a lot of these witnesses with whom Emily and I interact, that they insist on anonymity. And I don't blame them much of the time. I wish that, you know, people didn't feel that way, but I understand why they do. And it's because I think that people have a pretty good idea at this point the kind of risk that they're taking in being public about something like this. You know, because with this Woodstock case specifically, I remember there was a local reporter who reached out to us not long after, and she was interested in speaking with these witnesses. And I said, look, I think they've said everything that they have to say about it, you know. And she was sort of insistent, and it very much seemed like the sort of circus that the media can sometimes turn these sightings into, where they turn into this sort of like human interest, you know, piece for, and play it for laughs a little bit. And boy, that really would have turned these people's lives upside down. And so, you know, I didn't respond.
They were hesitant to talk to us. I even think that because it was a couple, one of, I forgot who contacted.
I think the wife contacted Lonnie.
Yeah, and he didn't really want her to do that. And then I think it worked out better for him because it got it off his chest. So I think she was just like looking at his best interest. But for the media to get into this, I think they had things to lose.
Oh, definitely. You know, I mean, it very much seemed to me in communicating with this reporter that she had no real interest in the case other than, you know, maybe getting some eyeballs on their website or their print newspaper or whatever. It very much seemed like the makings of a media circus. And so I wasn't about to help her beyond that. And the couple had already made it very clear that they weren't interested, you know, beyond having their story published through us anyway. And so just kind of left it at that.
Guys, let's break it here. So much more to talk about. And by the way, Tobias and Emily will return with the After the Paracast podcast, part of the Paracast Plus. So you'll want to check out that. We have Gene and Emily and Tobias and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Let's face it, food shortages are a real threat now. Supply chain breakdowns, inflation, fuel prices, global conflicts, fertilizer cutbacks, farmers being encouraged not to plant. The stage is set for the peanut butter to hit the fan. But for some reason, Americans are still in denial about food shortages. Listen, we don't take risks with other things in our lives, so why take risks with your food security? Those who know what's coming are using today to prepare. Millions of Americans have purchased Ready Hour emergency food from My Patriot Supply, the brand people look for when they're ready for real preparedness. MyPatriotSupply.com is America's largest preparedness company. Get stocked up on emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage to get you through tough times ahead. Your other choice is to stand in government food lines, hoping for a handout. As we both know, that's not an option. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey trader, listen up. The markets have changed. Have you changed your trading strategies? Vantage Point can help you conquer volatility. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word money to 813-813 and discover how to predict the stock market trends 1 to 3 days in advance with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. No matter which way the market moves, Vantage Point's patented AI can give you a massive edge. Text money to 813-813 to get what you need to stay ahead of markets and find your best entries and exits. Text the word money to 813-813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting, you agree to the terms available at VantagePointSoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and texts using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of Vantage Point. Your consent is not a condition to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text money to 813-813.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Of course, my mind works in strange ways that people cannot discern. I was thinking Jean and Tim and Tobias and Emily. That's almost like a folk group from the 60s.
No, that makes a certain amount of sense with like the paranormal traveling Wilburys.
There you go.
Yeah, my problem with the traveling Wilburys is that how many are still alive? Jeff Lynne?
Jeff Lynne.
Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan.
That's it.
I think that's it, yeah.
Roy Orbison was the first to go. George Harrison. Tom Petty. The story behind that is so great and so wonderful. How that thing came together. And it's almost unbelievable how it did. And I'll just leave it there. In any case, I did want to mention before we get back with Tobias and Emily and talking about winged humanoids and other strange creatures of the night in the Midwest. We just got a copy here, brand spanking new copy of a book. Timothy Green Beckley's Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters. Of course, that's from our friends Sean Castile and Tim Swartz, but also a bunch of contributors there to include Calvin Parker, by the way, Alejandro Rojas, Lon Strickler, people you've heard on the show, and also some guy named Steinberg.
Never heard of him.
No, I never did either.
There's some flash in the pan.
Yeah, you know, figure he'll be around another 50, 60 years. That's it. Then he's kaput. In fact, that's my middle name, kaput, because they didn't have a real middle name. Tobias, before we get bent out of shape here, winged humanoids, do we use the Mothman term or what?
You know, that's something that I really struggled with. There was a long time when we were covering these that I insisted on not calling it that. I remember when the original reports that sort of kicked everything off came out in spring of 2017, you know, it was a trio of reports that came into MUFON, and MUFON wasn't able to follow up on them or anything. You know, I've communicated significantly with Sam Maranto, who's a very nice guy, and so we've shared information sort of throughout the investigative process. And yeah, MUFON was never able to follow up on those reports, but when they came out, you know, there was sort of this initial comparison to the Point Pleasant, West Virginia sightings of the 60s. But it didn't really go too far. You know, I know I published in like just a short article for the Singular Fortean Society when they came out, and I definitely mentioned that and sort of, you know, tried to provide a little context through that sighting flap. But, you know, I also didn't think that it was going to go anywhere. You know, I thought that those first three sightings were just going to be it, and that mm-hmm. that was going to be the end of it. You know, especially because, you know, in talking to Sam, MUFON was never able to follow up on them. You know, like they were, the witnesses were emailed. I think they had some limited email communication, mm-hmm. but that was really it. But of course, that's not what happened. And next thing you know, sightings are coming in, you know, left, right, and center. And, at that point, things be, you know, just picked up very, very, very quickly. And so I was adamant that I wasn't going to sensationalize what was happening. You know, I didn't think there was any value in it, and it seemed like a very sort of tabloid thing to do, and I didn't want us to be a tabloid when it came to our news. At the very least, I wanted it to be objective, but also respectful without being dismissive. And so I used clunky phrases like winged humanoid or flying humanoid for months and months, you know, probably close to a year, year and a half, 2 years. But there reached a certain point where there were enough similarities between what people were just describing in terms of the core element of these sightings, that is to say, the winged humanoid sightings that seem to have the potential to be paranormal, that were similar to the Point Pleasant sightings in a way that I could no longer ignore. And it felt like the best way to contextualize these sightings would be to start referring to it as the Lake Michigan Mothman. Like, so at that point, rather than being sensationalistic, really what I'm doing is giving the reader an immediate impression of what this thing is closest to in terms of perhaps something they've already heard of. And so there's this instant sort of understanding then that comes from that without me having to explain a whole lot, you know. So they think Mothman, like, okay, so people are reporting this, you know, large winged humanoid with, you know, glowing red eyes, and there are potentially, you know, other paranormal elements to it, up to and including irrational fear and the feeling of being hypnotized, you know, almost possessed in some instances, and similar things. And of course, there were UFOs being reported in the same areas. And then it comes out of, you know, we've gotten other weird humanoid experiences being reported in these same areas. And so there's sort of a plethora of phenomena at this point, you know, happening in those same areas. And it was fairly reminiscent, again, strictly sort of in terms of what the actual the witnesses were talking about back in the 60s. There are elements missing from Keel's narrative, but that's not the standard to which, you know, I'm necessarily holding the definition or, you know, what have you of Mothman. Really, what I was interested in was comparing witness report to witness report. Mm-hmm. And based on that, Lake Michigan Mothman just seemed to fit the bill.
Has a ring to it.
It does have a ring to it as well.
Also, certainly it strikes at the public's attention. Ah, Mothman, that thing. But let me ask you in general here, moving to that Mothman, Point Pleasant, have you guys ever explored that case much?
You know, it's certainly something that's been on my radar for a very, very long time. I read, you know, Keel's Mothman prophecies at a fairly young age. I think I was probably a teenager the first time I read it. And, you know, I've revisited it several times since. And, you know, following that much more recently, you know, I've been aware of the work of, you know, Seth Breedlove and Heather Mosier and Mark Matsky and everybody over at Small Town Monsters. And, you know, they've done some really incredible work exploring the cultural ramifications of the Mothman sightings out in Point Pleasant, and that's all just been fantastic. And so, you know, it's interesting to see the effect that it's had on that area, you know, over the past, what, 50, almost 60 years, coming up on 60 in a few years. And so, yeah, it's definitely something that, that, like I said, I've been aware of for some time. You know, I hesitate to call myself, you know, an expert on those sightings or anything, because I think there are a lot of people who have done a lot more work, surrounding them than I have, but leaning on those people, I've certainly been exposed to a good amount of information surrounding that particular sighting flat.
Mm-hmm. You know, in passing, when you look at Mothman Prophecies, that was probably the only book John Keel wrote that represented a big payday. And the reason it had a fairly big payday is because it was optioned for a movie.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I think everybody's heard of that. And of course the movie. Well, I mean, now Mothman Prophecies, it was on the bestseller list back in the 70s, I think.
Yeah, cuz it came out late 60s or was it recent?
No, it came out in 60s. It came out in the early 70s.
Right. Okay.
But I want to say it was on the New York Times bestseller list for at least a while. But yeah, no, certainly the big payday seems to be the movie, written by Richard Hayden, of course, and then starring Richard Gere.
What's unfortunate, of course, is the movie had lots of interesting elements, which I thought channeled some of the essence of what Keel was writing about, even though it was just basically a fantasy fiction movie. But the big point here, making it interesting, is that with all that attention, it didn't even make back its budget. The usual budgetary requirement of a movie is twice the cost of production in order to begin to make a profit, unless it's a superhero movie where it's several times that. Of course, we're not talking about Hollywood pocketing money. They never lose money, even when they lose money. Got Tobias and Emily and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.